is the People Show with Bik Nizar and Randeep Janda.
Final hour, hour three of the People Show. Bik Nizar, Randeep Janda, Jamie Dodd here with you. Justin Morissette running the show. 650 if you want to get your takes in. Don't at me, coming up in about 20 minutes. I got a text here, Randy. We're doing wrong answers only. Today's wrong answers only, by the way, is things that will happen before the next Canucks home game is played, because another postponement for tomorrow's Ottawa game. And a buddy texted me, Bik will grow a full head of hair before the Canucks play the next home game.
How's that coming along?
Ask me again by the next home game.
All right.
And just breaking right now, I think this was kind of expected after yesterday. Canucks announcing Alex Chiasson has been placed in the NHL's COVID-19 protocol list.
So there you have it. Bruce Boudreau did mention that yesterday in the availability, so we were kind of expecting that coming about that positive test, but now officially we can let everybody know.
Yeah, and we'll let you, we'll play the full Boudreau media availability from today a little bit later on in the show, but we want to get into more of what happened last night across the NHL, because it wasn't just like a high-profile day, and it was some epic games that, you know, we weren't expecting. It was a lot of building into yesterday, Calgary versus Tampa, the Pennsylvania matchup, you know, Winnipeg-Colorado could have been a lot of fun. It ended up being a bit of a blowout, but with a lot of goals. And Dallas and Florida was really, really strong. You kind of go through that game, and we were talking about it yesterday, Randy, earlier. But we were talking about the elite teams, right? And how you look at the elite versus some of the other teams, and it's easy to get discouraged sometimes of the idea versus competing versus tanking, because the strongest teams look so strong at their peaks, and there are some teams that are having success right now. And yet they still even look a bit further away. When we're talking about regression, you know, some teams look regression-proof. Florida looks like they're a real thing, obviously, right? And they came into the season with some expectations. Tampa looks like Tampa. Vegas looks like Vegas, and Colorado looks like Vegas. Colorado looks like Colorado. So there's some teams that are just on fire that you can just look at and say, yeah, those are the class of the group. Everyone else is kind of in that murky middle. And what happens in the middle is sometimes you streak and sometimes you fade away. And I think you would say the Vancouver Canucks this season faded away early, right? They had their struggles. They've obviously been super hot, but they're a candidate for kind of regression, not to slink back to the, you know, 27th best team in the league or anything like that, but they're not going to be this hot. They're not going to be the team that picks up this many points in this many games in a row. They're going to cool off at some point, but it's a matter of will that play sustain and continue to have progress in their season. But you'll go across the league right now, Randeep, and you know, you mentioned a bunch of times today the Rangers. Who are the teams that are kind of leading the regression category for you?
Yeah, the Rangers are on top of my list based on the fact that they do have probably a top three goalie in the league right now when he's good to go, and Shesterkin, but high-end talent, but they still got to fill out that roster. So as much as we've seen them play really well on the back of an Igor Shesterkin, I look at the rest of the roster and say, they still got some work to do, and it's going to be a little bit, you know, longer until we can see what they actually are. So, you know, being in essentially second in the East behind the Washington Capitals based on points percentage, like, that to me is a little high. I see them dropping off, going behind a Carolina at some point in the Metro. You've got, you know, obviously Tampa and Florida are doing work in the Atlantic, so they're already behind them, but I do see them falling back a little bit. In the West, and this could be the benefit to the Vancouver Canucks, one regression candidate to me that credit to them on what they've been able to do this year, but the Anaheim Ducks to me are still that regression candidate. I like what they've been able to do. Troy Terry's been one of the best stories in the league. Zegras has been able to wow all season long when he's been playing and just do some magnificent stuff. But look at that points percentage, right? They have played more games than a number of the teams in this division. So I look at that team and say, okay, they've done a really good job with what they have, but is that sustainable throughout an 82-game schedule? We know Vegas is going to eat in that division. I still think Calgary, despite maybe not having that high-end talent, I think they will probably get closer to that second spot over time. I'm really doubting, you know, the two teams I'd look at right now, one in the East, one in the West, is New York Rangers trending in the right direction. Anaheim feels like they're peaking a little too soon. I think they're going to come back down to earth as well.
I talked about this yesterday about, you know, where your superstars are allocated on your roster or where your star players are allocated on your roster. It's great to have, you know, four guys up front, but if you know, kind of like Winnipeg, you know, they have Kyle Connor, they have Scheifele, they have Ehlers up front and Dubois. But, you know, where's the star player on the blue line? They have Hellebuck and Net, but where's the star player in the blue line? And I kind of look at this group here. And if you're looking for candidates, I think it's the Rangers, the Canucks, Anaheim, Nashville. And I'm going to throw Minnesota into this conversation just because now the Kaprizov injury, we can have a bigger conversation for them. But also, you know, the Calgary Flames, we spent some time talking about them. You kind of go through this, and, you know, the way I'm looking at this now is, do you have stars at all the different levels on the ice? And you mentioned the Rangers, and I've been critical. I don't necessarily look at them and say, hey, that's a team that's going to go on a prolonged playoff run unless it's on the back of Igor Shesterkin. But they still do have Shesterkin, Net, Adam Fox on the blue line, and Artemi Panarin up front. And Mika Zibanejad you can throw into this conversation as well, because I think one of the least discussed star-level players right now across the league. So they have that three-level stardom. Canucks, I've talked about this yesterday, Demko, Hughes, the way JT Miller's playing right now, that's star-level production. And you hope Elias Pettersson joins the ranks for that. And there you go. There's your platform for stars. You know, Anaheim, as you mentioned, you know, they don't really have that. The other team that's into this conversation, and every time I watch them, I buy into them a little bit more. And they're kind of off the radar. And we're all kind of like waiting for that shoe to drop on Nashville. But every time I watch them, Randy Beck, I got to admit, I get a little bit more impressed every single time. And on that same idea of where their stars are, again, I'm a big Philip Forsberg guy. I think that guy's a star in this league. But we, you know, how often are you watching Predators hockey to notice? And then Roman Josi, he's phenomenal. And Juuse Saros, he's their Demko. He's having the type of season that, and for a full calendar year now, that, you know, it's astonishing what he's doing. He's got a .928 save percentage right now. It's just unbelievable. And we're talking about least discussed stars right now. You see Saros is in that conversation.
Yeah, going back a calendar year, if you look at goalie stats and certain goalie stats, there are some that state that he is the best goalie in the NHL. Remember the second half of the year last year when Nashville did turn it up? He was a big part of that. And even going back, a little bit further back than that. So this is kind of the coming out party for a Juuse Saros. But when you talk about Nashville, and I'm not there with you, this is where I disagree. I'm still skeptical about this team. Mikael Granlund has been having one hell of a year. Like, he's top 15 in scoring in the NHL, and he looks real good. But Matt Duchene playing on the wing is a point-per-game player. Ryan Johansson, local guy. You know, we criticize both of these guys, Duchene and Ryan Johansson, for making all the money and not doing anything. This year, they're actually doing it. But the question I have is, are they going to be able to do it over 82? Because the sample size in Nashville has shown us that they aren't those players that are generally first-line players. And Duchene, you know, he wasn't that first-line center. Maybe they got something on the right wing with him there. But Johansson, he's got 27 points in 32 games. I want to see more from these guys, because the larger sample size shows us that, yeah, they aren't those players. They aren't those first or second-line players that can get you around, you know, 70 points again. They've done it in their career, you know. Duchene did it in Colorado with, he had 70-plus points. And Johansson did it in Columbus way back when. But recently, what have we seen from these guys? They haven't been able to be those players at a high level. So I'm still skeptical. I want to see it. They've got some good stories. Like, Tanner Jeannot has been a great story. He's up there in rookie goal scoring. But I want to see more from this team. I love Juuse Saros, and I love, you know, Roman Josi. But those high-end guys outside of Philip Forsberg, I'm still skeptical.
But how much of that is just the contract, right? Because at least we have seen what the high watermark is on some of these players, right? Because Matt Duchene has put up 70-point seasons. Now, that's not, you know, Tyler Seguin-esque and clipping 90 or anything like that. But you've seen that he can do that. Ryan Johansson has had, you know, some successful seasons, over 60 points, 70 points when he was in Columbus. And Mikael Granlund's clipped near 70 as well. If they can get to like 63, that's still a phenomenal season. And again, I look at those, Johansson and Granlund, I would look as more, you know, support role players. Duchesne, to me, the way he's playing this year is, you know, recapturing some of his form from where he was thought of, at least from Colorado.
Yeah, and him going to the wing has kind of been a pretty solid mm-hmm. move for him. But when I look at Nashville, and we talk about regression, we're saying, are they going to drop? And part of this is also who they're facing in the Central. St. Louis and Jordan Kyrou and Vladimir Tarasenko and what those guys have been able to do, that's mm-hmm. an eye-opener. Colorado and what they did to Winnipeg last night is probably what we're going to see more of going forward here, because Colorado is really starting to shape up, and their point percentage is at, you know, 70 right now, which is really interesting to see.
It's crazy.
In the last 12 games, Nathan MacKinnon's just been going off. You know, he's got, you know, 20 plus points, and he's just going off, including what he did last night. And Minnesota is the one that I think, with the Kaprizov injury, most, you know, recently we'd say, all right, Colorado, St. Louis, and Minnesota would be my top three in the Central. I'd say Nashville at some point maybe stumbles and gets that wildcard spot. But this Kaprizov injury may cause a similar effect for Minnesota, where their star player, who's in that 40-point range, if he's out for a while now, that hurts them big time, and that could be to Nashville's benefit. So, you know, Nashville to me is a regression candidate, but so is Minnesota if Kaprizov is out for a while.
The thing with Kaprizov, too, with Minnesota, because obviously they're a good team, but he, on that team, he has such like a gravity to him. There's a lot of good players, but so much of what they do comes from his ability. And, you know, he's not necessarily like a Connor Garland-esque as far as bringing guys into the fight, but, you know, the speed that he plays at plays into so much the speed that the team plays at. And I'm going to be very curious to watch what happens if his absence is prolonged here. Let's say it's a shoulder injury similar to what Jack Hughes went through. So that's what we're talking about, a month here, 5 weeks here. If it's similar to that, I'm going to be very interested to see if that team can sustain that level of speed without the guy that's the engineer of so much of that.
Yeah, and you know, that is going to be something that I think you look at, you know, that jockeying for position in the Central, because the more the season goes on, I think five playoff spots are coming out of the Central Division, right? You look at Nashville, St. Louis, Colorado, Minnesota are probably your four right off the bat. You're saying those are strong enough teams to make the playoffs. They probably should make the playoffs. The jury is still out on Winnipeg, where they get shellacked yesterday, and they have their moments where they're decent, but other moments where they're kind of a middling team. I think the real interesting one is Dallas. Like, if Dallas figures it out, they got a win against, you know, Florida yesterday, which was a great game to watch. But as they have these games that are in hand, can they make them count? They had a terrible start to the year, but you do have talent on that roster, and they could maybe include themselves as that fifth team and potentially pose some problems for the top four in that division. But, Bick, if you look at that Pacific division, I think there's three spots coming to the playoffs from that spot. And, you know, that's why any sort of regression in the Central Division, especially in the bottom end, is going to help somebody in that Pacific, whether it's a Calgary, whether it's an Edmonton, or whether it's the Vancouver Canucks, if they can avoid some massive regression on their end. And it's going to be difficult because you're heading into a road trip to the Southeast, which, you know, we're talking about regression. That is an area where maybe this team looks mortal again because they're dealing with some of the best teams in the NHL.
Well, as far as a team like Edmonton goes, we didn't include them in this conversation here because they've lost five in a row, right? It's like, well, how much more can you actually slide? But, you know, just going on that same principle of where their stars are, and that they have McDavid, they have Drysdale, they have Nurse, and it's that goaltending. And realistically, it's the rest of the supporting cast. It's they don't have the baseline of supporting cast. Their supporting cast are actual anchors on the ice. They are detractors to how they play 5-on-5 and not playing strong defensively. And they have a bunch of players that are just kind of like, I look at, you know, Kyle Turris and all that sort of stuff, like that collection of players. It's how effective are you going to be, and does their ability take away from your star power ability?
Well, you don't have many options because you don't have cap space. Any deal you're going to make is going to be, you're going to be taken to the cleaners. So, you know, Warren Fogle, Zach Hyman, I'm looking at you. Ryan Nugent-Hopkins, I know he's hurt right now, but when he was playing in the last month, he was not good either. So is there a way that you can get more out of these players? And what does that come down to? That probably comes down to coaching. If Dave Tippett is out of ideas and he can't get anything out of this group, you're looking at what happened in Vancouver with Bruce Brodeur and saying, all right, is there a guy in the market that could maybe provide a bit of a change in philosophy and improve that 5-on-5 game? Because they are atrocious there. You know, goals for in the last month, they are 29th in the league. Goals against, they're 23rd, which is not good, but it's not among the worst in the league. Their issues are, outside of Connor McDavid and Leon Draisaitl, who have 17 and 13 points respectively since December 1st, nobody else is doing anything. Tyson Barrie, the power play juggernaut that's supposed to pick up points, he's not doing anything either. You know, so I look at what's going on in Edmonton right now. If they want to get back into that race, and now based on points percentage, they're actually out of a playoff spot. But if they want to get back into that, I think the only thing you can do is be patient with the players and probably make a move at the coaching position, because something's got to change. You know, we were talking about good vibes only in Vancouver once Boudreaux came in.
Yep.
Edmonton needs that right now. They need some sort of change, and any probably going to be at the player level, though.
650, a couple minutes away from Don't At Me on the Wild and Kaprizov. And you never want to see seasons sidelined by injury, especially on the team level. But, you know, look, injuries happen, and we have to have the conversations here. Does this kind of open the door for a Wild tumble down the standings here? Because you look at that team, and they are good, and they should be, you know, in that conversation of teams competing in that Central Division for one of the three seeds there. But it's 42 points here in 32 games. They're comfortably in Wild Card 1, but without their star-level player now, does Edmonton rebound and close that gap? Winnipeg, LA, San Jose, Vancouver, all kind of looking at this as a chance to close that gap. Now, they've played the least amount of games here, and they don't exactly have a very busy January schedule, if I'm not mistaken here. I think they only play like 7 more games the rest of this month here. Maybe 9 more if I'm just kind of eyeballing it here. But it's not a huge slate here, so it's not as if they can make up create some distance between them and the pack here. So it's going to be interesting to watch what that team kind of does here the rest of this month.
Yeah, totally. And I think, you know, that's where you look at this division right now. You look at, there's a lot of pretenders in this division, right?
Mm-hmm.
I think outside of Vegas, you could probably say, like Calgary, they had an unbelievable start to the year. The COVID shutdown really affected them. We know that they were affected more than pretty much any NHL team this year, although Ottawa's probably putting up their hand saying, hey, we were pretty messed up by it a couple of times. But outside of Vegas, I'm looking at the 2 to probably 5 spot, and you can throw, you know, probably the 7 spot, because Vancouver still has some, you know, trending in the right direction. They're all, that's the tier 2 that I was talking about, where you're essentially saying, all right, who is going to separate themselves? Who is in a position to at least show that they can contend, maybe not with a Vegas, but who's the number 2 here in this division? And I think Calgary is the favorite in that discussion, but there's an opportunity for a number of these teams. But the challenge here is, you know, Edmonton, they're a rock bottom right now. And do they figure themselves out? This is an opportunity for Vancouver, but what's not in our opportune for these guys is that they're playing some of the toughest hockey that they will probably play all season long. And it's coming out of a period where in 25 days, they will be playing three games. So you're going to be in a position where you're going to have to show what you can do against the best of the best and try to make inroads in this division. But you've been sitting there and been rusty. And that's a big moment. I don't think it's a make or break element of the season for them, but it is a, you know, we talk about measuring stick, and we talk about up in your game, going from 0 to 60 real quick, or 0 to 100 real quick. Like, that's what I think the Canucks are going to have to deal with, where they're going to have to ramp it up really, really quickly here against some of the best competition in the NHL.
650, 650. While we're talking about all this seeding stuff, it has to do with my don't at me. So we'll get to it right now. Every day on the People Show at 3:20, it's don't at me.
Your takes uninterrupted. Don't at me. Text in your submissions to 650-650.
Don't at me. I said what I said.
I know it's early to talk about playoff seeding and all that sort of stuff, but we have these conversations about wild card and Pacific Division 3 seed and all that sort of stuff. Don't at me. We need to be done with this playoff format. Let's just get the 8 best teams in
one day
and we'll sort it out then. Yeah. Why are we complicating this? I don't care about division winners. I don't care about any of that. Just get me 1 through 8. That's it. So one team wins the conference, you get home ice through the playoffs, and that's all that gets decided. Why are we complicating this?
Okay, I agree with you because I always like the 8 or the 16 best teams in the NHL, or any league for that matter, to be in the playoffs. Gary Bettman and his whole divisional rivalries thing, that is money to him, man. Financially, it makes less sense, though. It's all about money. But I'm not coming at you because it's don't at me.
All right.
Don't at me. I got one here as well.
Yeah.
Don't at me. Bing bong will be in the Merriam-Webster's English Dictionary by 2023. Did you catch that game last night, RJ Barrett? That was beautiful.
You do not need to convince me or Jamie Dodd about Bing Bong. We are all in on Bing Bong, man.
Okay. Massive Bing Bong. Massive Bing Bong.
Jamie, you know this well. Bick, you know this well. One of my highlights of 2021 was being tweeted at by Bing Bong Guy.
Yes.
On Twitter. That was one of my highlights last year.
Might take a little longer for Bick Bok to make it into the dictionary.
Yes. I'm telling you, bok choy recipes, Bick.
What was your tweet? If you can't handle me at my Anthony Mason, you don't deserve me at my...
No, I love Eddie Curry. If you can't handle me at my Eddie Curry, you can't. You don't deserve me at my Bing Bong.
25-point comeback for your Knicks last night, man. That was wild.
And against the Celtics as well. Just beautiful.
Yeah, beat Boston. Beat Boston, baby. Actually, that's where Bing Bong started, right? They beat Boston at home.
Yep. It was at the beginning of the year.
And then Evan Fournier just last night.
Yeah, all he does is beat the crap out of Boston. You gotta love it.
All right, 650-650 into your Dunbar Lumber text message inbox. You got a don't at me. A take you've been holstering. Now's your chance to drop it into our inbox. Don't at me from Rager. But it's impressive for Dan Riccio to be back in studio today after attending the Penguins game. I'm still not over that picture.
I'm pretty sure there's no direct flights from Pittsburgh, but Reach found a way.
Wait, there's no direct flights from Pittsburgh?
No, you got to connect in Chicago.
Oh, okay, yeah.
Yeah, so no directs. Trust me.
Chicago's a major hub.
Oh, yeah. We got this one from Marcus and Gibson's. Don't at me. If we are serious about trading for top 4D, Niels Höglander may be that piece that gets traded. Marcus and Gibson's.
You know what? I don't hate that idea, right? Like I'm a massive Niels Höglander fan, right? But to get quality, you have to give up quality. Now, as of right now, the Canucks are doing a decent job, kind of papering their top four. Tyler Myers is giving you a lot of audits minutes, and as it stands right now, you're fine in that regard. OEL has been better than I think people were expecting and realized. Obviously, Quinn Hughes. It's if Luke Shen is kind of just doing that thing, then you can kind of survive with it. But at some point, the Canucks need to solve a top four D-man. And how you go about that, because there isn't anyone inside the organization that looks like they're going to take over that mantle.
Yeah, I guess the question is, value-wise, do you get that same value? We know a defenseman is, you know, wingers equaling, you know, what kind of defenseman do you get back, right? So, especially if you're looking for a right shot, look back at that Taylor Hall for Adam Larson deal. Like, you know, that was the extreme, but what kind of value of a defenseman are you getting back coming the other way?
Yeah, it's tough right now. Like, the guy I've been trumpeting for, you know, he's an interesting player. We're talking with the Rangers, but that Nils Lundqvist kid looks awesome. You know, that was a player I was excited for in his draft year, and he's improved a lot. And that's a decent player who could maybe, you know, it's about finding someone that can graduate as well higher up the lineup, about finding that long-term partner with Quinn Hughes that you're okay paying, but it's just a matter of, hey, can we find someone that we think we have someone here for six some odd years? Is that someone we can try to locate? And it's tough sledding to find that right now when it's not in your organization, Randy.
Yeah, I mean, we got another one here. Patio bringing this one in. Don't at me. If Nickelback was from New Jersey and named Bon Jovi, everybody would love them.
Hey, you know what? He's not wrong.
It's don't at me. I can't go at him. I think he's right there. I think he might be.
Not wrong. Don't at me, but did the city of Pittsburgh get warned about a certain Seawall driver coming to town?
They do actually have a bit of a waterfront in Pittsburgh near the river, so I wonder if they put up barricades.
Roger and Kitts, don't at me, but a shot that hits the post is a shot on net, and goalies shouldn't complain. Because that stat doesn't get registered, right? As a shot on goal?
You know, it doesn't. I've always had an issue with that. I'm totally with Roger and Kitts on this.
That's a shot on target, man. That hit the target.
You should get an extra shot because it hit the post and beat the goalie. I'm advocating you get an extra shot out of it.
Yeah, goalie should love it because it pads the stats. Like, that's a free save there.
Roger, I think you're onto something.
It should be a tracked stat at the very least if it's not included in the shot count. Like, you should be able to check the stats at the end of the game and see how many posts a team hit in a game, I think.
If anything, it provides you the unluckiest player in the NHL award every single year. Like, that to me on its own is worth keeping that stat.
And realistically, how many posts are we talking about? There's probably, what, 1.2 posts a game on average?
Yeah.
Does that sound about right?
That sounds about right. Unless you're who was that Tanner Pearson earlier this year where it felt like everything he was hitting a post every period?
I'd set it at like 2.5 a game between both teams.
Yeah, that's fair. All right. We'll get to more text on the other side. You'll also hear from Bruce Boudreau on the way. He met with media earlier today. We'll bring you that media availability on the way. Bick Nizar, Randy Bajanda, People Show, home of the Canucks, Sportsnet 650.
This is the People Show on the official home of the Canucks, Sportsnet 650. Here's Bick Nizar and Randy Bajanda.
What is up? Final hour of the week here on the People's Show, Sportsnet 650, Bick Nizar, and Randy Bajanda. I was trying to figure out this text from Evan here. Guys, a post can't register as a shot because it is neither a goal or a save. But the act of a shot is the player shooting.
Yeah. At least give it a shot. Like, maybe it doesn't have to be a save. It should be registered as shot, though.
I'd
be a mismatch, though, then, between the shots that the goalie has faced and the shots the other team has accrued.
Well, Jamie,
right?
Life is complicated, okay?
I'm just saying. I get what he means, right? Because you'd look like, the Canucks had 40 shots on goal and scored 2 goals, but then you'd look and the other goalie would only have 36 saves or something. You know what
no,
I mean?
I'm saying count the ones off the post as saves.
Yeah, that's what they would do. If they decided to go this route, I think.
Well, they already claim that, like, oh, that's all I gave him. So, like, you know.
Yeah. Well, I mean, we don't need to take that tone on goalies.
It fits the goalie guild messaging is all I'm saying.
Wait till Kevin Woodley joins our show next week after hearing that tone.
Yeah.
He's going to go off.
Reg says there are 2 stats, shots on goals and shot attempts. We're very familiar with the actual stats.
Also, when a shot goes post and in, suddenly it's a shot. But if it's post and out, it's not a shot.
Yeah, exactly. This is very, you know, convoluted lines of logic.
This is Schrodinger's shot over here.
Okay. On that note, though, like, you know, with the plus minus, the loser of that award gets the green jacket. What would the most unluckiest player that hits the most posts get? Is there a designation we would hit them with? We'll think about that one. I know I'm springing it on you here, but that, like, to me, there's another layer there, because that person, it'd kind of be like the NHL's, you know, version of the green jacket. Like, you'd be the unluckiest player in the league. You hit, like,
you should get
19 posts.
You should get a Tony Stark's mask. Because you'd be Iron Man.
Yeah, that's true. I like it. Just, or you just get a pipe. It's like the unofficial award. Just a lead pipe.
Or I thought you meant like an old timey pipe.
Yeah, that would work.
Yeah, just
I'm open.
Just sitting out there on a porch on a cool summer evening with a pipe, and there you go.
It's called the J.R. Smith Award, the pipe. Sorry, that's a different story.
I see you working. 650, if you got more thoughts here. We'll bring you Bruce Boudreau's presser right now. If you got thoughts on what Bruce had to say, he met with Vancouver media earlier. Postponements announced as he was meeting with media. No Canucks game tomorrow versus the Ottawa Senators. Here's what Boudreau had to say, your Vancouver Canucks head coach.
Coach, I'm wondering if we can start with your reaction to having another game postponed.
Well, obviously, we're not happy with it. I mean, it is what it is, but we want to play. I mean, somehow, somewhere, they're all going to catch up to you. So, I mean, now with this home game being postponed, that I think, I may be wrong, but I think that makes it 9 games in a row on the road that we're going to have. So that's always a little bit of a difficult scenario, but, you know, we'll just muddle through. Other teams are doing it, so we'll do it as well.
Do you have any concerns about what the schedule could look like later in the season with so many games postponed and that will need to be made up?
I mean, I think we're always concerned. I think we're all impatient, and we'd sure like to know what the schedule is going to look like in February or beyond. So, I mean, we just, wait and see, and hopefully it's not too difficult. A lot of the games that we're missing are home games, so, I mean, at least we'll be home for them.
We'll go to Ian McIntyre, Sportsnet.
Hi, Bruce. I know there will be disappointment in the group when you told them the news this morning. Is there anger at the way this is going?
I wouldn't use the word anger. I'd use the word frustrated. I mean, they've practiced really hard, and but I think any player would tell you that they'd love to play before they practice more than they like to practice. So, yeah, I mean, I think frustrated is the biggest thing, especially not knowing. But I'm guessing, you know, this team's gone through it before, and they went through it pretty bad. Cases of last year, but and we don't want it to happen anymore. But if it's for the good of the league and the good of the players' health, and you know, we're abiding by it, of course.
Everyone always says that there's no substitute for playing games. You can practice, but it's not the same as playing. From your experience, how long does it take a team to lose its game legs between games? Like, how long a break is too long?
Well, I mean, a lot of times when you had the players would have the 7-day break, I mean, and you'd have one practice and you played, you were always very conscientious, quite frankly, about that first game back. So, I mean, I would think that, you know, that's a definite thing, at least 7 days. But you can also tell as a coach, I mean, if you give players a day off, usually when they come back to play, then it's the next day, the next practice is usually not as smooth. It's a little sloppier than if you had a practice the day before.
We'll go to Patrick Johnston, Post Media.
Bruce, can you tell us the reason you've been given for why it was postponed? I mean, we've heard capacity restrictions and that sort of thing, but is it, you know, are there financial consequences to this? Are there other reasons why we might not be able to see this game?
I'm just the coach. I have no idea. I just was told it was canceled, and that's what I've told the players. I don't know all the reasons, but I'm sure there's good ones for it.
And what's your plan going to be now? You guys, I assume, are still traveling on Sunday. Are you going to practice tomorrow?
Yeah, we're practicing tomorrow, and then we're leaving Sunday and practicing Monday, and hopefully have a great game on Tuesday.
We'll go to Rob Simpson, Vancouver Hockey now.
Hey, Gabby, just a quickie for me. Just wondering if you had planned on skating a few of the guys that weren't around for a while today, and will they be available tomorrow? If you could go kind of go through the list.
You know what, Stimmer, it's a little difficult, quite frankly, because I don't really, and I don't want to sound like I'm not in the know or anything, but the rules, I mean, on the guys that have been out are a little vague right now, and no one seems to know whether they're able to skate tomorrow or not. We thought they'd be available to skate on today. And that's why we had originally given Wednesday off instead of, say, any time later in the week, because those guys would have been available to skate Thursday and Friday is what we originally thought. Then it was Friday. Now it's, we don't know if it's, they're going to be able to skate on Saturday or not. I'm in a wait and see mode, just like you guys. And, when we get the answer, I'm sure we'll set it out. I would love, a guy like Brock, for example, to get two practices in before he played after sitting out as long many days as he has. It's just it's not really fair, but because we all need to skate. But you know, that's the way it is right now.
Well, an injured guy like Hamonic, do you expect him to make the trip or join the trip, or do we think he's probably going to have to?
Again, with Hammer, I'm not sure if he's making the trip. He's had a little bit of a setback here, but which we certainly would love to have him on the trip. He's out he's working out today with the group, I'll, as soon as I'm done here, I'll go ask if he's the ability to skate tomorrow with the team, or what his status is. But as of now, no one's told me for certain that he's making the trip.
We'll go to Jeff Patterson, North Beach Agency.
Bruce, can you just kind of give us a little bit of a timeline today? Like, a lot of us woke up to this news that the suggestion was this game tomorrow wasn't going to go ahead. You had a practice scheduled for 11 o'clock. When did you call off the guys? When did you make the decision that you weren't going to skate today?
Approximately 7:30. 8 o'clock when the coaching staff gets in here pretty early, between 6:30 and 7:00. And I phoned Jim right away, and he hadn't heard whether it was canceled. And then when I got in, Mike Brown had said, okay, it's official. We're not going, or Edmonton's not coming, or Ottawa's not coming here. So that's when we debated whether to continue with practice or not. And at the time, we were going to have a couple players from Abbotsford practice with us, but they play tonight. So if we weren't going to play tomorrow, we were going to allow them to play the game. And that would have really put our numbers down in practice. So we thought it would be best that to have an off-ice workout today, have a good practice tomorrow, a good practice Monday, and hopefully that would be suffice.
Heading as far away as you possibly can to the National Hockey League, and with the option now of a taxi squad, have you guys decided, will you take extra bodies out on this road trip?
Well, I mean, we want to take at least enough to play. I would assume that we're, being so far away, that we're going to take a couple extra, and hopefully we get a couple extra back that have been out. But my biggest concern is the guys that are out haven't been skating, and what kind of shape are they going to be into play? So we'll definitely, I think, have to take a few for a taxi squad. As to how much that number is, I don't have any idea.
That is Bruce Boudreau when he met with Vancouver media earlier today. A couple of interesting things there from Boudreau there, Randeep. The Hamonic thing continues to linger as well, a setback.
Yeah, I think it's we've been joking around like when the Canucks next play their next home game. I think with Hamonic, it's another, another hurdle that, you know, you kind of have to jump over as a team when you're looking at a right shot defenseman. And with, you know, Poolman and Tyler Myers and Luke Shen kind of doing what they need to do, you can be in a spot where you don't necessarily need Travis Hamonic, but it's just a 2-year contract at this point in time. Like, nobody's confident when he'll play. You've got him for another year, and he's played 9 games this year. So in the big scheme of things, you know, Tyler Myers up in his game this year has been a huge benefit to this team. But you do wonder, if that hadn't happened, this would be even a worse contract. But it's not looking good right now based on all the issues he's had to deal with this year.
It is so, so tough just envisioning him coming back into the lineup. And also just, you know, what contribution are you going to get? You know, he was active in the offensive zone when he came back and, you know, tried to get involved with the play a lot. And, you know, so much of defense is timing and awareness. And when you're not sharp in that and you've barely been playing, well, what kind of player are you going to get upon his return as well? Bick Nizar, Randy Janda, alongside Jamie Dodd from the Canucks Hour, who from 12 to 1, go subscribe to that podcast with Thomas Drance as well. 5-star reviews only for all of our pods, The People Show, Canucks Central, and Halford and Brough as well. Going into week 18 of the NFL, guys, and, you know, the games themselves are going to be a lot of fun, but Monday is Black Monday. We know coaches are going to get let go. A couple of openings already across the league, the Jaguars and the Raiders. So there's two openings right now. I'll pose this to both of you guys here. Randeep, if I said over under 4.5 coach openings come Monday, what are you taking? Are you taking the over or are you taking the under there?
I'm taking the over there because I look at some of the teams that may have openings and I just kind of look at it and say, I think it's going to be higher, man. Like, I know there's uncertainty in some markets, but if you look at New York, like, I don't understand how they bring back Joe Judge. We know Chicago is not going to bring back Matt Nagy because it's been an absolute failure. But even some of the other ones, I look across, like, Minnesota. Mike Zimmer's been there for a while, and I understand some things have gone well, but at some point, you just kind of look at that situation and say, yeah, they're probably going to move on. Like, wouldn't it be smart? Because it feels like they're kind of stagnant there. So to me, I think that number is going to be around 5. I think there are going to be a couple of more additional firings come Black Monday.
Yeah, I would take the over as well. I think, you know, a couple of the ones that you mentioned, Randeep, are the obvious ones, right, with Chicago. I think you could throw Denver in the mix, maybe Minnesota, like you said, possibly Carolina. Right. So I think there's just not all of those will open up. But when you add it to the two that are already there, I think it's going to be enough to get it up to 5 minimum.
Yeah, this football preview brought to you by the Clayton Public House, the football season, this football season, make it the Clayton Public House, 188th Street and 56th Avenue in Surrey, and the ClaytonPub.com. I feel like Chicago is kind of a foregone conclusion in that regard. And Matt Nagy. Carolina to me feels like one that needs to be done, although I'm curious how much you know, emotional investment they already have in Matt Rhule, and if they just stay true to it. They gave him a 7-year deal. This is year 2. If they just say, you know what, we made it a financial commitment to him, we're just going to stick by it. You know, Denver and Minnesota to me, maybe they should move on, but, you know, Denver's had a fine enough season. Minnesota to me, you know, that defense was kind of going through a transition phase. Both coaches, I know they're defensive coaches, Zimmer and Vic Fangio, but they are so good at that side of the football. I worry what happens if you drop them. I know it's all trending towards finding offensive minds, and offensive football is the thing that's, you know, repeatable. It's hard to be great defensively year after year after year, but, you know, it's also hard to find coaches that have the mind for the game at that level. And Mike Zimmer's had a lot of success in the NFL, whether it be as an assistant coach or now with the head coach at the Minnesota Vikings. They've been, you know, that perennial plucky team that just makes things difficult for teams. The one that stands out is Joe Judge. It just feels like they have to make a change there. But are the Giants The Giants have historically been too stubborn for their own good, guys.
Well, okay, with the Giants, though, like, I don't understand the rationale of bringing back Joe Judge based on the fact that what are you sending, what message are you sending to your fan base is that, hey, we stink, the whole situation's been a mess. The money that they spent on, you know, players like Kenny Golladay and all that, essentially, it hasn't worked out. And he can make the fiery statements in media all he wants that, you know, players, former players are reaching out to him and all of that junk that we heard last week. Your team sucks. Your quarterback has not grown the way you wanted to. Your star players have taken a step back. What about Joe Judge at this point gives that fan base any confidence whatsoever? If you're looking for a new quarterback as well, you know, whether it's a holding pattern with Daniel Jones for 1 year or you're moving forward, like, I look at that situation and say, organizationally, the Giants see themselves as kind of like the blue bloods of the NFL, where, yeah, the 80s were great, Bill Parcells and all of that. They're kind of old money when it comes to the NFL, but they've lost their identity. Like, their standard is no longer there. You have to get rid of Joe Judge and try to reestablish who you are in the NFL. They got a long way to go. If they come back with that same coach, you're just saying, hey, yeah, we stink and we're okay with it.
Yeah, they could do the thing of, I just got a text here, Zimmer could get dumped just so Spielman can keep his job, the general manager. And you look, we know that there's that component to it of, you know, job security. I'll look out for me, and that guy goes out. But if you're the Vikings right now, I feel like it took them so long to find a competent coach here. And it's not so dissimilar to where the Seahawks are right now either. Of if you move off of, you know, what's the drop off? And the one thing I would say about what the Vikings have similar to the Seahawks is, you know, they get buy-in from Mike Zimmer. I don't look at a team that, you know, has quit on Mike Zimmer at all. And I to me, it's more of a talent thing, and it would be an unfortunate collateral damage if the GM looks out for himself and sacrifices the coach.
Yeah, Jamie, I'm curious to get your thoughts on this, but when it comes to Zimmer and Cousins, because I see them as a bit of a, you know, you look at the last 4 years and the amount of money that Kirk Cousins has been able to make, there was an expectation that you do at least have some sort of success, right? Got one playoff win. And back-to-back sub-500 season. So I think with Zimmer, it's fair to ask, is he that guy that's going to take that step? He might be good defensively, but with your franchise quarterback, who you have for another year at $35 million guaranteed, they haven't been able to take that step.
Well, and with Zimmer and Fangio both, right? Like, to your point, Bick, great defensive minds, but I look at somebody like Wade Phillips, right, from back in the day, where it's an incredible defensive coordinator. Is he the guy you want as your head coach? Maybe not. You love him as your defensive coordinator, and that might be where both Zimmer and Fangio kind of end up in the pecking order as well.
I feel like the Vikings have a Kirk Cousins problem, not a Mike Zimmer problem. Is that
fair? That's fair. That's fair. I don't know if that's going to be enough to save Zimmer.
Man, that is one expensive problem.
Yeah, it's a major problem, too.
Yeah, we'll get out on that. We'll see what happens over the course of the weekend, and we'll see what happens on Monday for Black Monday. We'll be here for all of that. We'll react live to those coaching changes, and we'll also get set for a new week of, we hope, we're sure, Canucks hockey. They'll travel to the Southeast, and they'll play Florida, and we'll set up that game on Monday. Plenty more coming up, though, on Sportsnet 650. Satyar Shah, Rand Deepjanda on the way with Canucks Central. It's all coming up here on the home of the Canucks, Sportsnet 650.